Progressive Radio Network, the number one network for those who care about the truth.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on a phone today. Should be back to the microphone tomorrow, but you should be able to hear me fine. Today, we're going to talk about putting oneself in another person's place is the best antidote against prejudice, and a whole lot more on health and healing. But I'm also starting something today that you're going to be hearing on a regular basis. Voices from the past that offers a chance to better understand our social, philosophical, and spiritual and political evolution. For example, Nelson Mandela, in a very rare appearance with Ted Koppel, and where Ted Koppel asked him what many commentators today would. Why would you support a terrorist like Yasser Arafat? And Nelson Mandela gives a response that any progressive would immediately understand. Everyone else, not so much. That's a rare comment. You'll hear it today. Also, you've heard the word, possibly, depending upon your age, of Saul Alinsky. He was very influential for Hillary and Bill Clinton. In fact, Hillary Clinton was a big, big fan of his and read all of his books and helped promote his philosophy. Milton Friedman, on the other hand, is considered the primary architect of our current form of, well, neocolonial capitalism. He was from the Chicago School, which, by the way, was founded by the Rockefellers. Now, what's interesting is when they both get together, and I'll play you that clip, very rare. Also, I thought you'd like to hear William F. Buckley Jr. debate Saul Alinsky on mobilizing the poor. We'll play that clip also, and why Naomi Wolf said, quote, I would not return to Israel, though she speaks Hebrew and she's very supportive of Israel. Then why wouldn't she return there? She's very proud of her Jewish heritage, as she should be, but her thoughts are germane to our current discussions. So I have an awful lot. I've been looking and finding rare clips that will allow some insight into how we got to where we're at, because a lot of people today followed these particular, they either followed the Milton Friedman School or they followed the Alinsky School, and we're going to hear from him. Also today, and you got to really not have anything else going on to hear this woman, because she talks fast. She talks as fast as Peglia. This woman does a talk on everything wrong with environmentalism, and she is right. In fact, once I heard her, and I had to listen twice because she talks so fast, but all of her figures are absolutely accurate. How do I know? Because she may have used my figures, and I, or got them herself, but my figures I used in the award-winning film Saving the Planet. And we went over those figures three times to make sure they're accurate. She came across either the same figures or, like a lot of people, they simply borrowed mine, which is fine. But listen to how she puts together. Because I did this in a speech at the UN about 8 years ago, Earth Day. I was asked at the UN, would I be the keynote speaker? and also for Equinox, and I did that. And then on Earth Day, I went across to the UN, and the whole room was packed with environmental organizations, there or the heads of them. And I had in that moment a chance, and I'm thinking, as I'm walking up after I was introduced, and it was standing room only, I could either talk about the environment, which is what everyone expected me to do, or I could talk about what happened to the environmental movement. Where is it? We have hundreds of millions of dollars being given to the World Wildlife Fund and other environmental organizations, but where are you on getting rid of animals, which is the number one thing that should be done? Al Gore's not doing it. He eats animals. In fact, he grew up on a cattle farm and flies private jet, but in his documentaries, it's always showing carrying his own luggage and walking through the airports. And he gives good speeches, and what he says is actually accurate. It's what he doesn't say. You know, it's the unsaid part. So I decided in that moment, and I was prepared for an enormous backlash, to tell the real and honest story about the complete destruction of our entire environmental movement in the United States. Who caused it, how it continues, and how we lie about having a vital environmental movement. We're all interested in the environment and global warming, when that's all a lie. We're not. So I'm going to play you that clip today. It's a two-part clip. I'll play you, see how much time we have. Also today, if time permits, we're going to play Brave New World. Why? Because I believe we are in that world now. This is from the Corbett Report, Stephen Corbett, who also you can hear on the Progressive Reader Network. One of the brightest guys on the planet, by the way. Certainly one of the most industrious journalists and very creative. You'll hear Aldous Huxley. Did you know who Aldous Huxley's brother was? Oh, he was in the Rockefeller group, and he was a major eugenicist. Do you know what organization he founded? The largest environmental group ever, most powerful, and in my opinion, the least effective, very corporatized, World Wildlife Fund. Do you know who his father was? See, no one ever pulls back the camera to look at who's their father, who's their brother. They were all eugenicists, except Aldous Huxley. We'll talk. This is just a couple weeks before his death. You'll hear him talk about how they're controlling us, how we're actually going to line up and willingly give our minds over to corporate interest. I thought you'd find that interesting. I have a commentary today, and my commentary is on the subject of hypocrisy, duplicity, contradiction, how virtually everything in our lives is based on these three principles today. Now, am I making exceptions? I'm making no exceptions. I will document it. Then think about it. And just sit and think, does it make sense to you or not? And then I don't think we'll have time, but John White had the experiment and freedom is failing. So you see, we have a lot to share. And this is a thinking person's program. That's why you don't hear entertainers or politicians on the air here, with rare exception, because we want to go right to the issues that empower us. A lot of you are probably, or have in your life, facing or have faced prejudice, and you ask, why in the world would you be prejudiced? Don't you understand what it's like being the person that you're prejudiced against? Most people can't understand that. So this is a subject that's hard to define and harder still to conceptually frame as the subject of a study, and yet that's exactly what was done at the University of Cordoba, which is in Spain, and it's due to the overlap with other traits like emotional intelligence or kindness. Now, according to some theories, it is roughly putting yourself in another person's shoes. That's the key. The ability to see things from another person's perspective, from a cognitive and emotional point of view. That is to say, to imagine and understand other people's beliefs and opinions and experience their feelings and emotions, and understanding the feeling the world through their senses and eyes. For example, we are outraged, and rightly so. So myself, I post a lot of articles of why I'm opposed, and always been opposed, of separation of a child, because the child's going to be traumatized by that. Stop the politics for a moment. Just think of what it is to be the child. Now, when people go through the risk of bringing a child into this country, they're not doing it because, you know, it's an easy trip. It's a very dangerous trip. That's why I played an audio clip showing the politics of this and the gamesmanship of it and the exploitation. The drug cartels are sending thousands of people into this country, including children, with drugs. They're using them as mules. 80,000 in 1 year were sent from countries in South America, the drug capitals, like Honduras. And those kids have no choice. They also have no chance. They're going to be victimized the moment they're selected. And why would a parent allow them to do that? Because the parent has a gun to their head. Once again, we're not in the shoes of someone down there in El Salvador, where the 13 gang exists. And they're absolutely the most, you know, terrorist-based gang in the world. They make the Mexican mafia look tame by comparison. But then all of Mexican government is corrupt at every level. So when people come through, if they have any money or clothes, they even strip them naked. This is the army and the police of Mexico do this, all with the full knowledge and quiet acceptance of the federal officials, because nothing happens the National Security Agency and Homeland Security is not aware of. So we know all this, and this is prior to them getting to either a legal point of entry and asking for asylum, or an illegal point of entry and being caught and released or put into one of these detention facilities that are inhumane. All that is part of the story, but it's what part of the story we don't pay attention to that's important. For example, for you to smoke your marijuana, almost 200,000 people had to die, many beheaded, others stuffed into a tub of acid to dissolve them. Yeah. In Mexico, this is just Mexico, because we were not humane or spiritual enough to legalize marijuana or other drugs. If we took away the war on drugs, we'd take away the profit incentives, we'd take away the capacity for people to exploit it. If we put instead programs for physical and mental rehabilitation, expunging the prison records, that's a good thing. But we can't do that, and we won't do that, because the private prison system profits from it. The detention people, the people making these stupid cages, make $700 a night. Can you imagine that? They can. And they know that they're never going to be turned down. No government agency ever turns down someone in a contract that they get, especially no-bid contracts. It's all corrupt. The whole system's corrupt. And this whole mess is a child that's traumatized, a child that can't understand anything, frequently cannot intellectually process any of this. They're just abandoned. So we have every right to feel outrage at this. The question is, why didn't we feel the outrage when Obama was doing it to 80,000 children, 80,000? And Clinton signed the law, 1996, no outrage. Prisoned all these African Americans and Latino for drugs, the very drugs he did, no outrage. That Obama did, no outrage. That Bush did, no outrage. Do you start to see the contradictions here? I'll deal with that a little later. But in order not to simply be angry at one person and not everybody involved, maybe you stopped with the politicking and posturing, and instead put yourself in the shoes of a mother or a father or a young person and ask, what would I do if I were in their shoes? How would I see all this playing out? Why is this important? Because this somehow we have an ability to see from another person's perspective from a cognitive and emotional point of view. That is to say, to imagine and understand other people's beliefs and opinions and experience their feelings and emotions, and understanding the feeling the world is not friendly to them. The world is not embracing their needs. Right here in the United States, we have 16 million hungry children. Who cries for them? Where's the Me Too movement for the 16 million abused children? Because when you deprive children of food, which is essential to their growth and bones and health and teeth and to their brain, that's abuse. Well, the 2.5 million who are homeless, leave school each day, don't have a home to go to. Where's their movement? Where's their advocates? Where are the people outraged? So you see, there's always a danger in any society that has selective outrage, but not universal. If we care about a child in the United States, we should care about a child right now dying of starvation or the impact of cholera in Yemen. More children are at risk of dying in Yemen than any other place on the planet. 18 million people are at risk of dying. And we are personally responsible. Every person that pays taxes is responsible. Because our government is on the ground and funding Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Great Britain, France, all participating in this genocide in Yemen. Not a word in the newspapers. So, put oneself in another person's place. And would you change your prejudice, your indifference? That's what this study in Spain is saying. And I think it would. It's an important study. It's an important outcome. And it would make a big difference. From the Salk Institute, I once had a conversation with Salk. It was near the end of his life, over on Center Park West. I think it was on the sixth floor, and he was in an apartment, and brief conversation. But his vaccine was the primary cause, if not the exclusive cause, of disease. So he was trying to eradicate polio and at the same time causing it. But this is from the Salk Institute. They do good research there, and they found preliminary evidence that a THC, that is the terahydrocannabinoid, and other compounds found in marijuana can promote the cellular removal of amyloid beta, which is the toxic protein associated with Alzheimer's disease. And while these exploratory studies were conducted in neurons grown in the laboratory, they may offer insight into the role of inflammation in Alzheimer's disease and could provide clues to developing novel therapeutics for the disorder. So if you have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, I would definitely recommend the cannabinoid oils because of what they do, not just for turning off inflammation in the brain, but they are neuroprotective against Alzheimer's and these amyloid beta accumulations in nerve cells. I've had the benefit of living on a farm or a ranch my entire adult life. I believe in being close to nature. Oh, and by the way, someone asked me in my recent travels where I was filming, how do you not get ticks and tick bites, Lyme's disease, from having been a rancher and an organic farmer? Well, it's not because there's no ticks, it's because I put tea tree oil on my shoes. I wear my socks, white socks, on the outside of my pants when I'm out in the woods, and therefore I can see the ticks. And they don't like tea tree oil. And just simple observation. There was a couple that went for a walk with their dog, came in, and they had, the dogs had 23 ticks. They both had ticks from a simple little walk. So Lyme's disease and tick infestations are becoming more and more common. In any case, besides that, nature is one of the best things you can do for your mental health. But University of Queensland did a study on this, and people who visit parks for 30 minutes or more each week are much less likely to have high blood pressure or poor mental health than those who don't. And for all of us who, let's say, live in New York City and have the benefit of the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, the Bronx Botanical Gardens, and Central Park and Prospect Park and Van Cortlandt Park and all the parks, they're all wonderful. The more you can get into them, the better it is for you. It's called a dose of nature. Relaxes you, and you need to be around that green. Also, there's new research that was done at Marshall University School of Medicine, and they're looking at NAKATPASE, oxidant amplification loop. They're coming up with some very positive results for anti-aging. I'm going to wait a couple of months till I see more research, because I'm going to combine several new approaches to anti-aging, and I just want to let you know that I'm on top of this, and I've read the studies that were published in Nature and Scientific Reports, and once I see that there's really good information, I will share it with you, because I always like to get ahead of the curve to share everything that can slow down and reverse the aging process. But they're doing it, so I'll keep in mind on that. And from the University of Kent, which is in the United Kingdom, a new study of injured athletes carried out by University of Kent found they could benefit from using mindfulness as part of the sports rehabilitation process to improve their pain tolerance and awareness. Mindful meditation. And by the way, every year we have tens of millions of athletes injured right in the United States. And this is one way to get healed and get back into your athleticism in a positive way. And finally, from St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, antidepressants can increase the risk of death by 20%, especially for those with progressive lung disease. This was published in European Respiratory Journal. So they're looking at people with COPD and other conditions, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And boy, does the death rate increase when you take antidepressants. But a lot of people who have these diseases are depressed, so they're given antidepressants. And then they can't sleep. And when you can't sleep, that increases your risk of AFib. And also, then it gets them on a cycle of taking more antidepressants. They're vomiting. Their immune system takes a fall. And they're more susceptible to infections and breathing issues. So don't take the antidepressants. All right? You're much better off dealing with natural, non-toxic modalities. Oh, and by the way, from Western University in Ontario, probiotics may prevent breast cancer. That's a big deal. And a doctor, Gregor Reed, the professor of microbiology and immunology and surgery at Western University in Ontario, said the bacteria, the good bacteria, have the potential to abet breast cancer and are present in breasts of cancer patients, while beneficial bacteria are more abundant in healthy breast. So, good bacteria come from good foods, bad bacteria from bad foods. Good bacteria help prevent breast cancer, bad bacteria can accelerate breast cancer. So, get your good probiotics. Stay off the sugars and the meat. I'm Gary Noll. We're 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. And when we come back, we're going right into we're going to go into a clip. I want to play you a clip from Stephen Corbett on The Brave New World, because we're in The Brave New World right now.
Lips to pay. Huxley's Brave New World presents a nightmare future in which humans are no longer born, but cloned, hatched in incubators to perform predetermined roles in a worldwide corporate slave state. Everyone has a rigidly defined place in this social order, from the reasoning functional alphas down to the grunt-like epsilons who perform repetitive manual labor. Each worker is programmed from birth with subliminal messages, simple catchphrases which adults use to regulate all aspects of their lives.
Everyone belongs to everyone else.
We have to respect deltas and gammas and betas.
Everyone is useful. But I'm so glad.
I'm an alpha.
I'd hate to be as dull as a delta.
There is little possibility for unhappiness, since everyone has been genetically manipulated and conditioned from birth to enjoy their lot in life. And any unhappiness that arises can be quickly dispelled by a dose of Soma, a powerful psychoactive drug that brings happiness to the docile workers. The book is often regarded as a mere flight of fancy, but in a speech at Berkeley in 1962, the year before his death, Huxley conceded that the ideas in the book came not from an overactive imagination, but from real developments in the sciences that were beginning to make likely for the first time a type of scientifically crafted dictatorship.
Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This seems to me the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say. And this is a problem which has interested me for many years, and about which I wrote 30 years ago a fable, The Brave New World. And I have noticed with increasing dismay that a number of the predictions which were purely fantastic when I made them 30 years ago have come true or seem in process of coming true.
Although it may sound like Huxley is speaking of these scientific developments as an arm's-length observer, in fact, his family had stood at the very center of Western science for decades. When Aldous's grandfather, T.H. Huxley, became known as Darwin's Bulldog for his strident defense of Darwin's theory of evolution. The relationship between the Darwins, the Huxleys, the Galtons, and the Wedgwoods is a long and intimate one, with these famed British families becoming obsessed with inbreeding to preserve their family lines and genetic traits. This obsession with genetics sprang from Francis Galton, one of Charles Darwin's cousins. Galton developed the theory of eugenics, the idea that the poor, the handicapped, and other unfit groups are the results of bad genes that must be eliminated from the gene pool. This theory became notorious as the Nazi justification for the Holocaust, but was carried on in elite scientific circles by men like Julian Huxley, president of the Eugenics Society, and Aldous Huxley's brother. Julian was a prominent scientist and activist, co-founding the World Wildlife Fund and becoming the first president of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. In the founding document of UNESCO, entitled UNESCO, Its Philosophy and Its Purpose, Julian Huxley writes, "It is, however, essential that eugenics should be brought entirely within the borders of science. For, as already indicated, in the not very remote future, the problem of improving the average quality of human beings is likely to become urgent And this can only be accomplished by applying the findings of a truly scientific eugenics. Julian Huxley was preceded as president of the Eugenics Society by another of the Huxley-Darwin-Galton relatives, Sir Charles Galton Darwin. In his book, The Next Million Years, written 10 years before Aldous Huxley's speech at Berkeley, he wrote that we would have to put up with human nature for a million years, or the time it takes for a new species to evolve, unless we could have an internal revolution. This would come about if means were discovered of deliberately altering human nature itself. As an example, he reflects, life in the crowded conditions of cities has many unattractive features, but in the long run, these may be overcome, not so much by altering them, but simply by changing the human race into liking them. He also advocates the institution of a world government to bring about these eugenics policies, saying, if then there is ever to be a world government, it will have to function as governments do now, in the sense that it will have to coerce a minority, and indeed, it may often be a majority, into doing things they do not want to do. Steeped in this milieu, perhaps it is not surprising that Aldous Huxley wrote such a book, exploring the possibility of a eugenical world dictatorship. Was Huxley warning us of what was to come, or merely telling us? Was this something he feared, or something he desired? Whichever the case, his brother, for one, had very specific ideas about the proper function of works of art like Brave New World. Another function of art exists in the field of public relations. Every country has now woken up to the need, in our complex modern world, of public relations, which is but a new name for propaganda, that term which unhappily has grown tarnished through misuse. In a world which must be planned, governments must often assume initiative and leadership. And for this leadership to be effective, the general public must be informed of the problem and of what is in the government's mind.
Okay. Well, what is in the government's mind? Let's take a look at this. What characterizes American government today, in my opinion, is not so much dysfunctional politics as its ruthless contrived governance carried out behind the entertaining and distracting and disingenuous curtain of political theater. And what political theater it is, diabolically Shakespearean at times, full of sound and fury, and yet in the end, it signifies nothing. Maybe I'm wrong. Can you name me one major act that benefited all Americans, not just the rich, but all Americans, not just a special interest group, that made our lives better, that made the planet healthier and more sustainable? Name me one. The reality is we are ruled by a government of scoundrels and spies and thugs and thieves and gangsters and ruffians and rapists and extortionists and bounty hunters and battle-ready warriors and cold-blooded killers who communicate using a language of force and oppression. Our nation of sheep has, as was foretold, given rise to a government of wolves. The United States government now possesses the greatest threat to our freedoms. More than terrorism, more than domestic extremism, more than gun violence and organized crime, even more than the perceived threat posed by any single politician, the U.S. government remains a greater menace to life, liberty, and property of its citizens than any of the so-called dangers from which the government claims to protect us. This has been true of virtually every occupant of the White House in recent years. Unfortunately, nothing has changed for the better since Donald Trump ascended to his throne or Oval Office. Many in this audience are old enough to have remembered H.L. Mencken's writings. He predicted almost a century ago, He said, all the odds are on the man who is intrinsically the most devious and mediocre, the man who can most adeptly disperse the notion that his mind is a virtual vacuum. The presidency tends year by year to go to such men. As democracy is perfected, the office of president represents more and more closely the inner soul of the people. On some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last, and the White House will be adorned by a downright moron, end quote. Kind of sounds like it's reached it. Facts speak for themselves. But the reality is we've been robbed blind by our government of thieves. Americans no longer have any real protection against government agents empowered to seize private property at will. For instance, police agencies, under the guise of asset forfeiture laws, are taking America's personal property based on little more than a suspicion of criminal activity and keeping it for their own profit and gain. In one case, police seized $53,000 from the manager of a Christian rock band that was touring and raising money for an orphanage in Thailand. Despite finding no evidence of wrongdoing, police kept all the money. Homeowners are losing their homes over a non-payment of taxes. In fact, one person lost their home because they couldn't come up with $400. And municipal bills such as water or sewage bills that amount to a tiny fraction of the value of your home, if you can't pay the water bill, you could lose your home or a sewage bill. And then there's the Drug Enforcement Agency, which has been searching train and airplane passengers and pocketing their cash. You heard me right. If you get on a bus, train, or plane, if you're in an airport, they can come up to you and search your luggage, search your person. If they find any cash on you, they can keep it and will. How much is this? This is not chump change. This is up to $3 to $4 billion in a year. And that's without them finding anything wrong with the people who they took their money from and didn't give them even a ticket. And yet that doesn't make anyone's top list of talking points, a government that has been so militarized and so criminalized that we, the people, walk around as its potential prey. We're being taken advantage of by a government of scoundrels and idiots and cowards. Mencken calculated that Congress consists of one-third more or less scoundrels and two-thirds more or less idiots. I think he has it in reverse. By and large, Americans seem to agree. When you've got government representatives who spend a large chunk of their work hours fundraising, being feeded by lobbyists, and shuffling through a lucrative revolving door between public service and lobbying and making themselves available to anyone with enough money to secure access to a congressional office, you're in the clutches of a corrupt oligarchy. Now, mind you, these same elected officials rarely read the legislation. Wasn't it one of those people, in fact, wasn't she Speaker of the House at the time, Nancy Pelosi, who said, you can find out what's in the bill when you pass it. Now think of that for a moment. One of the most important pieces of legislation in history, no one had read it. No one. But the people who wrote it, who wrote the legislation? Who do you think writes legislation in Washington? Lobbyists. Alex, the American Legislative Exchange Council, all the private contractors, of which there are over 200,000. These are the people that write the legislation. They take away laws to protect us that can no longer be used against them. That's how it works. So you actually listen to someone who says, don't worry about the fact that no one in Congress, not the House that creates the bills, the Senate that ratifies the bills, and the President signs the bills, don't worry that none of these idiots have read anything. None have done anything but abrogate their responsibility to you, the public. Someone is screwing you. And that's the way it is with every single piece of legislation. The citizen is never better, always worse. We're being locked up by a government of greedy jailers. We become a carceral state, spending 300% more on our prisons than on our schools, and imprisoning close to a quarter of the world's prisoners, despite the fact that we have lower crime now than at any other time in recent U.S. history. We make up only 4% of the world's population. The rise of overcriminalization and profit-driven private prisons provides even greater incentives for locking up American citizens for such nonviolent so-called crimes as having an overgrown lawn. Yeah. And local townships are part of the problem. You can't do anything without getting permits, and they charge you for everything. You want to build a doghouse? They charge you. Want to put a deck on the back of your house? They charge you. And then they spend the money in foolish ways. They build giant bureaucracies. Every government agency becomes a metastasizing cancer. Government is only supposed to be there to facilitate the safety and help the American population with its environmental issues so our water, our soil, our air remains clean and safe for us, and that our streets are functioning, our schools are functioning, that which we share in common functions for the benefit of everyone. That's not how it works today. The police are not there to protect and serve. They've been militarized. And think of those in the police force that are on those anabolic steroids. Do you realize what that does to your brain? Put you into a constant psychotic state. And so as a result, we end up criminalizing people who shouldn't have anything done against them, all because it makes money. Through asset forfeiture, lucrative public contracts from private service providers, and by directly extracting revenue and unpaid labor from populations of color and the poor. And in states and municipalities through the country, the criminal justice system defrays costs by forcing prisoners and their families to pay for punishment. But what if the punishment is, and true story, a woman got a traffic ticket. She was parked too long in a space, and she was given a $40 ticket. She was working two jobs that didn't even pay her minimum wage. She couldn't pay all of her bills, and she was late. They arrested her. They put her into a private prison system, private judge, private jailer, private probation officer. And within a couple of weeks, she owed thousands of dollars on a $40 ticket. No one saw the injustice in this, the immorality in it. No one. No one cared. You see, we talk about being a nation that cares about each other, and we don't. That's a lie. It's part of our self-deception. And so that person had to have her family members sell cars and to raise the money to get her out. And how many people are affected? Hundreds of thousands a day are going through the new private prison system where we have criminalized being poor. And we're being spied upon by a government of peeping Toms. The government is watching every single thing you do, reading every single thing you write, listening to everything you say. You're in a car, you have someone in the car, they're listening. They're tracking you. Google tracks every single place you go and has a map showing every location and how long you were at every single location. Did you know that? Do you know those flat-screen TVs that you buy and you put in your bedroom, your computer in your bedroom? It's listening and watching to everything in there. Everything. Your cell phone can turn itself on. It has two cameras. One you can take a picture and one's taking a picture of you. You didn't know that. And they've been doing it for a long time illegally. So omnipresent surveillance is paving the way for government programs that profile citizens and document their behavior and attempt to predict what they might do in the future, whether it's what they might buy, what politician they might support, or what kinds of crimes they might commit. The impact for this far-reaching surveillance is increased conformity, just like Aldous Huxley was just speaking about. As technology analyst Jillian York concludes, mass surveillance without due process, whether undertaken by the government of Bahrain or Russia, the United States, or anywhere in between threatens to stifle and smother that dissent, leaving in its wake a populace cowled by fear. It's not just the police shootings of unarmed civilians that are worrisome, as bad as that is. It's the SWAT team raids gone wrong, more than 80,000 last year, that are leaving innocent citizens wounded, children terrorized, and family pets killed. No apologies. It's the roadside strip searches, in some cases cavity searches, of men and women alike carried out in full view of the public in pursuit of drugs that are never found. It's potentially lethal and unwarranted use of so-called non-lethal weapons like tasers on children for speaking back to the police, for trying to run from a principal's office, for at the age of 12 getting into a fight with another girl. Two girls got in a fight, arrested, handcuffed, tasered to death, many people. We're being forced to surrender our freedoms and those of our children to a government of extortionists, money launderers, and professional pirates. The American people have repeatedly been sold a bill of goods about how the government needs more money, more expansive powers, and more secrecy, secret courts, secret budgets, secret military campaigns, secret surveillance in order to keep you safe. That's lies. But everyone who works in the government is a pathological liar, in my opinion, and the people that run departments are sociopaths. Under the guise of fighting its wars on terror, drugs, and now domestic extremism, the government has spent billions, hundreds of billions of your money on endless wars that have not ended terrorism, but merely sown the seeds for blowback, surveillance programs that have caught few terrorists while subjugating all Americans to a surveillance society and militarizing the police that have done little to decrease crime while turning communities into war zones. So not surprisingly, the primary ones to benefit from these government exercises in legal money laundering have been the corporations and the lobbyists and the politicians, none of whom like you. They don't want to be near you. They don't like you. They despise you because you're the other. And they have power. Power corrupts, as the man said. And total power corrupts totally. And it always has and always will. We're being held at gunpoint by a government of soldiers, a standby army, as if it weren't enough that the American military empire stretches around the globe and continues to leech much-needed resources of the American economy. The U.S. government is creating its own standing army of militarized police and teams of weaponized bureaucrats, and these civilian employees are being armed to the hilt with guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment, authorized to make arrests and trained in military tactics. It's gotten insane. Who now are they arming? Well, the Small Business Administration, yeah. Social Security Administration, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Educational Department, the Energy Department, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, the Smithsonian, U.S. Mint, Health and Human Services, the IRS, the FDA. They're all militarized. And that doesn't even begin to touch on the government's arsenal, the transformation of local police into extensions of the military, and the speed with which the nation could be locked down under martial law. And we think it couldn't happen. To our detriment, the criminal class that Mark Twain mockingly referred to as Congress has since expanded to include every government agency that feeds off the carcass of a once constitutional republic. And the government and its cohorts have conspired to ensure that the only real recourse the American people have to hold the government accountable or express their displeasure with the government is through voting. The trouble is, we have been led to believe by the media that the only people worth voting for are the two classes, the two corrupt, vile, sociopathic, completely criminal classes, the Democrats and Republicans. What a group of low-life degenerates they are. And yet, people line up. For what? Show me the president out of office that hasn't become worth $100 million or $200 million or $300 million, sucking up to Wall Street, Big Pharma. But not you. You'll never see him again. Because they consider themselves supernova, human beings. They only descend down from their rich enclaves when they want to act as if somehow they're related to the rest of Homo sapiens. But then that's only part of it. The other part is how we have become a nation of hypocrisy. We are a hypocrisy nation. The practice of claiming to have moral standards or beliefs to which one's own behavior does not conform. How so, Gary? Say you want peace and freedom and democracy. Yes. But then the U.S. caused the death of nearly 20 million people since the end of World War II. Pride ourselves in freedom of speech versus the government relegated to free speech zones. These are the economic parasites of societies. These are the lowlifes. They load them up with debt or offshore their essential assets to other countries where they can exploit it. And the poor people who work in those companies, frequently for decades, they're out of work. Tens of millions of Americans fall into economic despair because of them. Monsanto merged with Bayer, Horizon buying Time Warner. Only seven media companies control the airwaves. Monopolies control all of society. So where's their fair competition? You say our Constitution will protect us, but I see asset forfeiture as rampant. I see surveillance of our electronics as rampant. I see going into war where the American public does not support it. So where's our Constitution? Google maps everything you do, where you drive, no privacy, yet we say we have rights to private lives. Facebook and Google are banning websites. Many progressive websites are being banned. Truthful websites are being banned. You may turn on this radio program one day and find, at least on some stations, it doesn't exist. Or you might go to over the internet and download it, you find it doesn't exist because it's been banned. Not yet, but it could be. Others have been banned, over 120 good ones. I provided them with a forum. At least now, if you go to prn.fm, you can hear them. We say that people should have a right to vote for the candidate they want, but then we end up with our entire electoral process controlled by large hidden donors. And so the people have no choice except the choice that's given to them. We want clean water and clean air to breathe and clean food to eat. And it's still possible if you're very conscious, but not for the average person, because no one is stopping the pollution of our air, water, and genetically manipulated foods. We say we want to live in a sustainable world, yet today, as I'm speaking, 36 fires are in California, three out of control, people fleeing their home by the thousands. Today, it's not sustainable. Who's honest about that in California? Because you don't want to have people vacate the state because it's a non-sustainable state. California's history, it's over. Miami, it's over. You can have everyone lie to you. They're building a $3 billion mall in Miami. Boy, you talk about people really being fooled, but then that would mean that all the people still living there have to deal first in self-delusion. That is the hypocrisy. I don't want to live in an unsustainable place. Then why don't you move? Well, I don't want to move. I feel comfortable where I'm at. We give ourselves the excuses to accept our contradictions. Over 20 states are adversely affected by climate change, earthquakes, droughts, fires, floods, pollution. Nothing can be done about it, yet people will not move. We claim to believe in global warming, yet when was the last time someone actually did something? All of the top 10 environmental groups receive millions a year, but how many promote veganism? Environmentalists flying in private jets like Leonardo DiCaprio, vacationing with friends on one of the largest yachts in the world, flying from the Cannes Film Festival on a private jet to accept award from the River Project, and then flying back on a private jet. That is utter gross hypocrisy. Talking about the concern for children and rightly condemning separation of children at the border, and yet the left doesn't utter a word when Clinton and Obama have left so many children dead from from wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and think of Libya, and think of children that are now being sexually abused and put into slavery. Where is the word of outrage for them? Or don't they count? That's hypocrisy. 16 million hungry children in the United States, that's hypocrisy. 2.5 million homeless children, that's hypocrisy. Bail out our Wall Street with trillions of dollars and not a single homeowner protected. 7 million homes foreclosed on. That's hypocrisy. Working two jobs and still can't pay a date, pay off your bills, so you take a payday loan and end up paying with rollover interest, 500 to 1,000% interest, and that's just the beginning of my list. The other list I will continue tomorrow, showing that everything in our life today is hypocrisy. I mean everything, and I'm going to go through every detail of it. You can accept or reject it, but we're going to deal with it. And by the way, I'm continuing tonight. Tonight at 7 p.m., I'm going to take on the deep state with Danny Sheehan. I'm going to play you some audio clips you've never heard before. Yeah, it's at 7 o'clock. You won't want to miss that. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used.